Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories about technology. Each year, the U.S. business magazine Forbes reports on young people seen as the best and most creative of their generation. Recently, Forbes hosted the first Forbes Under 30 conference in Vietnam. The meeting honored Vietnamese business leaders under age 30 who are making a difference in technology and other areas. Some speakers at the event said Vietnam's future depends on the efforts of young people there and how they apply technology. For instance, U.S. pop music singer Katy Perry, a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations, said she is hopeful for Vietnam's future. I'm told you are also the lead generation in innovation, which means you can find solutions that never existed before, she said. But some older speakers wondered if young Vietnamese care more about luxury cars and Facebook than about helping the country succeed. When you live in a peaceful time, you have everything. You have all the opportunity, former Ambassador Tan Nhu Tinh Ninh said. But the challenge is, can you identify your dream? If you live in that comfort zone, you don't know what you can do for your country. Ms. Ninh also praised young people in the country for accepting technology and exploring what it can do. Electronic products are Vietnam's top exports. Large companies Samsung and Intel are increasingly producing more goods in Vietnam. More than one-third of the population is online, and at least one-fifth has a smartphone. Many of Forbes' young Vietnamese business leaders include those in the technology world. Nguyen Hà Dong created the popular mobile phone application Flappy Bird. Pham Le Nguyen co-founded the technology business Five Desire, which helps build the next generation of successful companies. More than half of Vietnam's 90 million people are under 30 years old. One of those young people is Nguyen Trang Tinh. He is the chief executive officer of Trang Thuy Group, a real estate and tourism company. Mr. Tinh says one problem he faces is that many of the people who work for him are older than he is. The challenge is, of course, how to learn from those people, but at the same time, how to manage them effectively, Mr. Tinh said. Some of the women on the Forbes list of top business leaders deal with a different kind of problem. Lê Hoàng Nguyên Vy says, it is common in Vietnam to ask, are you married yet, rather than, are you married? She started the online company Chun before being hired as vice president of Vinicom, an e-commerce website owned by Vietnam's only billionaire. She says, before, when friends met me, they'd say, when will you get married? But after I joined Vinicom, they asked, how is Vinicom? They don't ask about my marriage life anymore. U.S. Ambassador Ted Osius also spoke at the conference. He reminded the audience that this year, the U.S. is celebrating 20 years of normalized relations with Vietnam. Many of the Forbes honorees studied in the United States. They do business with U.S. partners or work with Americans on social, environmental, and other issues. Mr. Osius said the professionals on the 30 under 30 list show how the U.S. and Vietnam are developing a strong relationship and creating positive effects. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. The largest U.S.-based online retailer wants to send products to its customers by unmanned planes. But it does not appear the plan will be put into place anytime soon. Christopher Jones Cruz has more.
Amazon.com has received patent rights to send its products to customers by unmanned drone aircraft. The company is the largest U.S.-based online seller of products. It delivers those products to customers electronically, by mail, and by other delivery services. Now, the company has received a patent for its planned drone delivery system. A patent is an official document that gives a person or company the right to be the only one that makes or sells a product for a certain period of time. In March, federal officials gave Amazon permission to test its drone delivery plan. But even with a patent and the ability of drones to make deliveries, it does not appear the company will put its new delivery system in place any time soon. The U.S. Patent Office published the document. It describes Amazon's plans to use the Global Positioning System, or GPS, to deliver products to homes and to wherever people are. The drone will use a customer's mobile device, usually a smartphone, to avoid hitting people or buildings, and to identify a safe area to land. The company wants to deliver products within 30 minutes of people ordering them on its website. However, the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is worried about security. Although it gave Amazon permission to test the system, the agency said the operators must be able to see the unmanned planes. That greatly limits the delivery area. Loretta Alcala is a professor at the Vaughan College of Aeronautics and Technology in New York and a former attorney at the FAA. She told VOA on Skype that Amazon is trying to find a way to show the FAA that its drone technology is safe. Amazon is not yet offering drone delivery, but Professor Alcala says it will not be long before it does. Professor Alcala says there are concerns that the drones will crash into objects or people, or that the products and drones will be stolen or intentionally damaged. But she says that is because many people believe the drones would only deliver the products to the front door of a house. Professor Alcala notes that American homes are not currently able to receive deliveries on their rooftops. However, it is possible that homes will one day have special areas on their roofs designed to receive product deliveries. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
We end our As It Is program with some news about Learning English broadcasts. As of June 7th, Learning English programs will no longer be heard on VOA's medium wave radio station in Bangkok, but you will still be able to listen to all our programs on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, and on podcasts from iTunes. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Reporters are following the story of Muslim Rohingya and Bangladeshis as they go overseas in search of a better future. Thousands of Rohingya and Bangladeshis were put on boats but left at sea. News media also have reported on the discovery of many bodies along the border between Malaysia and Thailand. The remains were buried at jungle camps on both sides of the border. News reports, government officials, and observers have used words like trafficking and smuggled when describing the boat people. But the two words have very different meanings. To put it simply, smuggling involves transporting people who willingly go across borders. Their movement is either done secretly or through illegal methods. The word trafficking suggests tricking or abusing those being transported. It is commonly linked to human slavery. So are the Bangladeshis and Rohingya being smuggled or trafficked? Jeffrey Labovitz is head of the Thailand office of the International Organization for Migration, the IOM. He says the migrants taking the trips are asking to be smuggled.
160,000 people have left since 2012, and these people have sat at dinner tables and over teas and coffees with community members and thought about how they can do this journey and how they can get enough money to pay.
But as the IOM and others have found, the trip is not always easy. Sometimes families back at home could not pay. Payments were stolen. Prices suddenly increased.
They're put into these terrible situations where they are extorted and they're tortured and they're held in captivity and starved to death. Now, murder, rape, extortion, those are all terrible, terrible crimes. In some of these cases, it's probably trafficking too.
Matthew Smith is the head of the rights group Fortify Rights. He spoke on Skype from the Oslo Freedom Forum.
It is a situation in which human beings are being regarded as property. They're being tortured and coerced into raising money to buy their own freedom. And that's a deeply exploitative situation, preying on the desperation of asylum seekers.
Some officials see human trafficking as part of a larger smuggling network. But Mr. Smith and other activists think traffickers are running the business.
We are not suggesting that every single person who has crossed the Bay of Bengal would meet the elements of human trafficking, but these are human trafficking syndicates that are bringing people from point A to point B. And the terms of consent change once the Rohingya or Bangladeshi board the boats.
The countries along the network have generally failed to investigate suspected human trafficking. They also have ignored reports their officials in the military, police, and at the local government level have been involved. Human trafficking is a sensitive issue in Thailand, where military officers govern the country. Last year, the United States gave Thailand its lowest rating in the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report. When people are smuggled, they are often considered illegal migrants. If they have been trafficked, they are considered victims of trafficking. Myanmar's Rakhine State is home to many Rohingya. The government considers those who left the state to have been smuggled, not trafficked. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Mute Singer. It was written by Stanislav Sukalski. Here is Shep O'Neill with our story.
Every year at this time, the peasants began their long religious pilgrimage to Gidle to visit the church there and pray for God's help. They walked or rode in wagons. They crowded the roads leading to the holy town. Gidle was famous in Poland as a place where God did miracles. The cool days also brought many beggars to Gidle. The peasants gave away more of their money on such a religious holiday as this. Some of the beggars were blind. Some had no feet or arms. Some were very old and seemed like lost children looking for their mothers. There was one among them who was called the Mute Singer. He was given this name because he could not speak. There was a time when he was able to sing while playing his guitar, but he lost his voice. Now he played the guitar and sang, but no sounds came from his throat. His lips just moved with the music. The mute singer was a tall, strange-looking man. His face and hands were brown like the color of copper. He had white hair and a white beard. He looked like one of the wise men you read about in the Bible. Early one morning, I saw the mute singer washing himself at the river. He smiled and touched the ground with his hand, meaning that I should sit down. Then he pointed his finger straight up to tell me that he had a surprise for me. Suddenly, he put his hand into the water and rubbed two of his fingers together, making a strange sound, exactly like the sound of a croaking frog. He did it many times. Then he lightly hit the top of the water, sending little ripples of waves across the water to the other side. Suddenly, everything around us seemed to be moving. I could not believe it was real. Thousands of frogs came racing toward us, jumping and swimming under the water and on top of the water. I began to shake with excitement. The frogs crowded around us. I could see their heads and eyes showing above the top of the water. The mute singer found some snails and cut them into small pieces and began to feed the frogs. They came closer and closer. The mute singer started to play his guitar. As he did so, the frogs became quiet and listened. And then they too started to sing. Young frogs, old frogs, every one of them began to sing. I never heard anything like it. Not a frog moved. They all just sat and sang. No one ever saw the mute singer at night. Nobody even knew where he slept. But during the day, he could be found at the same place, sitting near the church, and playing his guitar, while his lips moved silently with the music. Everybody liked the mute singer, the peasants as much as the beggars. People threw their pennies into the cups of the beggars sitting on the ground asking for help, but not so with the mute singer. Into his cup they dropped their pennies gently. He used the shell of a turtle as a cup. He got much more money than the others, but this did not trouble any of the beggars. At the end of the day, the beggars crowded around the mute singer in front of the church. He took a clean white handkerchief from the pocket of his old coat and put it smoothly on the ground. He made it seem like a religious ceremony. Then he put all his money on the clean white cloth. He made all the beggars do the same. Then he gave all the beggars an equal share of the money, but kept nothing for himself. Sadly, he looked around at the beggars, covered with dirt and disease. The sun was sinking fast, and the peasants had all left the church area. The mute singer lowered his head and started to pray. The beggars were on their knees, joining him in prayer. Then the mute singer began to play his guitar, moving his lips with the music. The beggars sat still and listened. The music cut deep into their hearts. It cut through their years of pain and suffering and loss of hope. It made them feel human again. Many of them cried, and with dried old hands, wiped away their tears. I heard a beggar say the mute singer was not a human being, but God, dressed as a beggar. If that is true, another answered, he would not come as a beggar, but as a priest. One day, hundreds of new peasants entered the city. They were welcomed at the church by its religious leaders, who dropped water on their heads and blessed them. Singing and church bells filled the air, as did the cries of the beggars asking for help. As the peasants came out of the church, the mute singer began to play. The peasants crowded around him and dropped pennies into his cup. Suddenly, his fingers hit the wrong strings. He threw his arms into the air. His guitar fell to the ground and broke. One of the beggars caught the mute singer as he fell and held his beautiful head on his knees. We carried him into my mother's empty barn and put him down gently. I held his hand, and he slept a little, then opened his eyes and smiled weakly. He looked like a lost child. The mute singer pointed to his chest and made the sign of the cross. A beggar said, "He wants me to give him the last rites of the church. Can you get me a piece of bread?" "But you are not a priest," I said. "This is something any man would be glad to do for him. It is an emergency." But I am dirty. My clothes are dirty. Hurry, get some bread and a white shirt. I ran out and got some bread. Next to my house was a synagogue. In the dark, I saw the rabbi's finest white shirt hanging to be dried. I took the shirt and hurried to the side of the dying mute singer. The beggar put on the white shirt and gave me a candle to hold. Then he got down close to the mute singer and said, "Hear me, my brother. Open your eyes if you can, so that you may see the sign of the cross made over you. Here is your last communion, a beggar's communion of black bread." The dying man looked at the beggar, smiled weakly, and left us forever. That night, I had very strange dreams. In one dream, I saw something white moving slowly toward me. It was like a fog. But when it got very close, it changed into the shape of a man. It was the mute singer, still holding his guitar. Then, two angels floated out of the dark into my dream. They fell to their knees before the mute singer, kissing his hands while he gently touched their heads. It was like what I had often seen in old religious paintings. I slept badly. I felt something heavy, and it was hurting me. I awoke and saw that I was holding, too hard against my chest, the shell of a turtle. It was the turtle shell which the mute singer used as a beggar's cup for money. He gave it to me while he lay dying.
You have just heard the story called The Mute Singer. It was written by Stanislav Sukalski and published by The Atlantic Monthly in July 1964. Shep O'Neill was the storyteller. The producer was LaJuan Davis. Listen again next week at this time for another American Stories program in special English on the Voice of America. This is Shirley Griffith.